Welcome to The Mindful Way, a podcast series from Mental Health Ireland. My name is Miffy Hode, one of the team of development officers with Mental Health Ireland, and in this podcast series, I'm talking to people about using mindfulness practices and principles to navigate various life challenges. In this episode, we're looking at bereavement and loss, and I'm in conversation with Brian Nolan. Brian holds an MA in healthcare chaplaincy from DCU. He's a certified healthcare chaplain, an end-of-life and grief and loss specialist, and he's also a training and facilitation expert. He's currently a training and facilitation consultant specializing in healthcare, a person-centered approach, teamwork, life transitions, end-of-life care, advanced care planning, and having compassionate conversations. I went to record this episode with Brian at his home in Dublin. We could have talked all day about the subject matter, especially about end-of-life support, that's a passion of mine, but I've extracted the parts of our conversation that explore what bereavement and loss is, how it impacts us, and the sort of mindfulness principles that can be applied while navigating the process of grief. Here's where we started. Hi, Brian. It's lovely to meet you. I'm really grateful to you for giving your time to talk with me today about bereavement and loss and navigating it mindfully. Maybe what we might do is have a look at what we mean by bereavement and loss.
Okay, well, thanks very much for having me, Miffy. I'm looking forward to spending the time with you. Bereavement is sort of the general term, I suppose, we use to describe the loss of someone or something that's precious and dear to us. When somebody belonged to us, or somebody that we love, or somebody close to us, or something happens to us that causes a loss, we enter this period of grief. And it's that period of grief that can last weeks, months, years, and a lifetime for some people. It's that journey of grief that we call bereavement. So bereavement is a general sort of term, and I suppose it recognises that loss is different for everybody. It's uniquely personal to the person suffering that loss. But I think bereavement is something that affects us in every part of our beings. That affects us physically. People have a physical reaction to loss. People often say, I feel like I was punched in the stomach. Or sometimes people say, I think I've something caught in my throat. I can't swallow. And they have aches and pains that they never had. They don't want to eat. It affects us mentally and psychologically, in the sense that we feel detached from things. You're completely distracted. People talk about being in a crowd, but being apart from the crowd. Walking down the street with crowds of people around and feeling apart from that. Being in the supermarket and finding the simplest tasks, like doing the shopping, impossible. Like looking at everything and seeing nothing. It also impacts us emotionally, because for a lot of us, we don't experience intense grief that often, thank God. For some people, it seems to happen to them quite a bit. But people may go for 20 or 30 years without losing anybody significant. And then when it happens, no matter how prepared you think you are, or what the circumstances of that loss are, I think it's very important to remember that death is always a shock. Yeah. A profound shock. Even if the person has had a long run to their illness, and they've been dying over a period of time, and you know that the end is coming. People always say, I knew he was dying, but I can't believe he's dead. Yeah. And it's that transition from somebody being present to somebody being absent. I suppose the coming to terms with that absence is the journey of grief that we call bereavement and loss. Yeah. It affects us spiritually as well, because, and I don't mean that in the religious sense, but it brings up our own mortality. We enter a space then that can be really painful for people. And the pain can be searing for some. And people would often say, I never knew I was capable of feeling at such a deep level. And it's trying to come to terms with that, I suppose, and the gradual coming to terms with that over time that we call the journey of grief, which is bereavement.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. Yeah. What you're describing there, it's very visceral. So those physical feelings that people experience through grief, you actually feel a physical broken heart. And there's that finality of death. You are expecting somebody to die. And somewhere within that, there's some kind of human protection of complacency and a secret hope, maybe, that while there's life, there's hope, even though you know in your heart of hearts it's not. But then when the event actually occurs and death does occur, there is no turning back, there is no reversing that. And so you are faced with that utter devastation and reality of what has happened. And it's that rebuilding from there, and that is just this massive process of navigating previously possibly unexperienced feelings, how deep and profound loss is of a person that you love so much. And like you say, the deeper the love, the deeper the loss. And I suppose we have to be careful there too, that if people are experiencing maybe not feeling very much, that doesn't mean they didn't love the person that they lost, because we can go through periods in our grief maybe where we do actually kind of shut down that experience, and we can find all kinds of ways of negating our own pain. I'm thinking of an experience I had after my father died, and he'd been dead about 3 months. And then in our locality, a young man died by suicide, and he was in his early teens. It was horrendous. And I remember thinking, well, my dad lived his life fully. And I sort of parked my grief. And I remember then in the new year kind of going, what's wrong with me? And of course, all that squashed down grief was still there and needed to come up. I wonder how common that is. We use it as a way of kind of quelling our own devastation. What were your thoughts on that?
I absolutely 100% agree with you on that one, because I think we're very ageist when it comes to grief, and particularly with older people. And one of the things I would never ever do that, because I've learned it myself over time, I would never ask somebody if they told me their parent died, for instance, how old were they?
Okay.
Because instantly somebody asks that question, they put you in a space of saying, well, they were 88 or they were 85 or 86. Ah, bless them, they're great innings, weren't you lucky to have them so long? Mm. And already your grief is minimised, and you use the word squashed.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it is, because in a sense, you're disenfranchised. Mm. You know, and there's a whole section of grief that we call disenfranchised grief, where people feel that they're not allowed to grieve the way they should. And as you quite rightly said, we squash it down. Mm. But bereavement and grief has a nasty way of what we call ambushing us, you know, and maybe it's even going to somebody else's funeral months later. And you're in that space, and suddenly you find yourself being hugely upset at that funeral. And it's that, oh God, I thought I was better.
Yeah.
I thought I dealt with this. For me, when you lose somebody, it's like you get this massive wound. Mm. And over time, that wound heals over, okay? But the healing is very gradual. And eventually the rawness of it is gone, but there's a big scar there.
Yeah.
And over time, there will be moments when, you know, you'll hear a song on the radio, or you'll open the wardrobe and see the person's coat, or you'll see an object that reminds you of them, or you'll get a smell of something. So the smell can be hugely evocative. I remember a man telling me one time that his wife had died a long time before, and he was just rooting through a drawer, and he came across a jar of her face cream. And he just opened it to smell it. And he said it was a new jar of cream, obviously, but the trace of her finger was across it. And he just burst into tears and was shocked at how the grief could ambush him in the middle of an ordinary day. You know, that he thought he was fine, and all of a sudden that the wound was ripped open.
Yeah.
So, and I think anniversaries, even if it's 20 or 30 years later, if it's a significant loss that you've had, I think anniversaries can be very difficult days. You have this sadness in yourself because this is the day and you're remembering all the events of that day. And then the next day you're fine again. And you'll be saying, but how can I be so sad about this? It was a long time ago. I've moved on. You know, I suppose we struggle to understand it all the time, because it is absolutely different for every single human being.
Yeah.
And there's no one size fits all. So even if both our parents died on the same day, and had the same name and everything, I couldn't say to you, I know how you feel.
Okay.
You know, because you would have had a different relationship with your dad than I had with mine, and we both miss different things. And that's why even within families, it's very difficult, because everyone is going to miss different things about that person, because each person in the family loves the person who's died in a different way. It's like when the person dies, the family all go to the train station, and they get on the grief train, okay? So everybody gets on the same train at the same time in the same place, but everybody sits in a different seat. So they're looking out the window at different views all the time. People will grieve deeply at different times to one another. And sometimes that might come across as, well, it's not affecting him as much as it's affecting me. Or, you know, I was much sadder than them and they don't seem to be as badly affected as me. But they are, but maybe not at the same time as you. So it's the mindful piece. And for me, mindfulness is an awareness of yourself and your own understanding of what's happening within yourself and flexibility with yourself and your own sense of allowing whatever needs to be and going with that. Not that you can change it, because if somebody dies, you can't change that, you can't fix it, you can't undo it, but you can notice it and you can be aware that it's there and you can understand that because it's there, then it's having this impact on me and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody else around me is dealing with this particular loss in different ways. That's okay. That's their thing. You know, I maybe just need to let go of the judgment piece and lower the expectation window a little bit. I'm not supposed to be in great form. I'm not supposed to be the life and soul of the party. I'm not supposed to have great clarity of thought here. Somebody I love is dead. My heart is broken. It is going to take a while for that brokenness to mend.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to have to be gentle with myself to get myself through this time. I will come through this time, but it will take time. Like people will say to family members all the time, time is a great healer.
Mm.
And yeah, it is. Time does heal. But in order for the time to heal, you have to take the time to do the work that we call grief work, to give yourself that time and baby step yourself through it, because it will be two steps forward and one step back.
You talked about ambushing, you know, how grief ambushes us. And that there is this process and the time being a great healer, which is what is trotted out so frequently. Mm. And yet it is, but we have to take the time. It's not much of a comfort to the person going through it because it's like, yeah, but when? And in mindfulness practice, one of the principles of practice is to sit with whatever is occurring. And maybe one of the ideas people might have about mindfulness, that it's all about sitting in some beautiful place of peace and calm and wonderful tranquility. Whereas, in fact, very often grief is messy.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're navigating that mess that is grief and bereavement, using the principles of mindfulness, what are your thoughts on that as to how we can navigate even that ambushing, which can come in sideways?
One of the biggest problems with grief and loss is that if you're the person who's actually been impacted by the loss, you are de-skilled. You might be the best mindfulness practitioner in the world, but you are de-skilled when this happens to you, and all of your theory and all of your knowledge and all of your understanding just goes out the window. And that's why we need other people. That's why loss is really a community event, you know, and it's communal, and we need the people around us to mind us and to bring us through it, and in a way to continue to give us permission to be sad and not to be okay, and to remind us that we're not okay and that this is normal. I have worked in the area of loss, grief and bereavement all of my life, and when my own father died, I remember thinking, okay, I knew it before, but I understand it now, you know, and I was completely de-skilled at the time, you know, and needed other people to come and help me and remind me of stuff that I knew to be true, but I just wasn't able to access it for myself when I was going through it. So we talk about mindfully going through loss and stuff like that. Sometimes I think that's a huge step for people. I think people need other people to come in and help them to do those things. You're going out to support somebody in loss, you never begin a sentence with at least. Well, at least they didn't suffer. At least the suffering's over. And look at all the time you're going to have, you know. And, you know, you wouldn't want them back down that suffering anymore, would you? You know, and, like intellectually, we know that. Like cognitively, we understand that. And there's no way you'd want anybody's suffering to continue. But at a heart level, your heart is broken because this person you love is dead. That is the awful bit. And that in turn de-skills each one of us in terms of our coping. We all cope, and we're all doers and fixers and menders and minders, and we're brilliant at helping everybody else. You know, I remember doing a session for carers there a while ago around burnout and stuff like that, and I looked up the word care in the dictionary, and every word that described the meaning of what care was an outward giving of yourself, your heart, your mind, your time, your energy, your love, your compassion, your forgiveness. It was all an outward traffic, right? And to me, we're very good at that. And we're very good at sort of looking after everybody else. But when it's ourselves, we're suddenly surprised that we're now having these big reactions ourselves, because we're going, but I'm normally very capable, and I'm the one who has the right words to say for everybody else, and I'm the one who's the first one there to help somebody else, and I can't help myself. And that's what I mean by de-skilled. And it's because you're just overwhelmed by this emotional onslaught. And that's why we need community, friends, people around us.
You mentioned grief being a community event. So whether that community is your immediate family or your neighbours or your neighbourhood, but that we need to be mindful of each other at that time and practice towards one another compassion, understanding, and validation, rather than trying to appease people. And yet, for a lot of people, bereavement is a very lonely road.
You know, Cicely Saunders, she's the founder of the modern hospice movement, she said the most profound spiritual question you could ever ask another human being was just simply to sit with them, to look them in the eye and say, how are you in yourself today? And just to sit and wait. To me, that's such a powerfully mindful question. You know, but none of us ever ask that question, because if you think about what that means, that question actually goes under the rib cage.
Of course,
you
it
know,
does.
It goes right into the gut of somebody. And you have to be sort of brave enough, if you ask that question, to allow whatever needs to come out, come out. And I suppose the mindfulness piece for me would be to sit there without a need to respond. You know, without a need to fix it, change it, or make it better.
Does that apply, Brian, then as well to ourselves? I mean, you know, when we ask ourselves, how are you in yourself today? And be able to sit with ourselves as we would sit with someone else. Because I know myself, I've been asked by times of bumbling along thinking I'm doing grand, and somebody will say, how are you? And it's like, well, I was grand till you asked. Like,
you got ambushed.
Because you're kind of, you know, you're busy functioning, you know. But I think there's something in our own mindfulness practice that where compassion, just like the term charity starts at home, compassion starts at home. If we can sit with how we are genuinely feeling in ourselves today and be able to be present to that without trying to fix it, without trying to make it different or undo it or any of those things. That is also a way we can support ourselves in that journey.
I think that's so important, because we need to be able to really deeply listen to another human being. But in order to be able to listen to another human being, we first of all have to give ourselves a hearing. We have to listen to what's going on in ourselves, you know. And I remember reading a phrase a couple of years ago, and I love it, that when you wake up in the morning, you have to just give yourself a couple of minutes to see what has washed up on the shore of your life today. And I think it's just so beautiful. So what has washed up on the shore of my life today? What's the self that's been given to me today? You know, am I jumping around full of energy, or am I only running on half the energy that I had before? That's the self that I have today. And unless I give that self a hearing at the start of my day, I'll bring the same non-hearing and non-listening to all the rest of my interactions. You know, and I'll end up more exhausted at the end of the day because I've squashed all that down and I've battened it down. I've taken a deep breath and I said, can't be dealing with all of that. You know, there's work to be done. There's people that need me. I have to go out and fight the fight and cheer on and fix the world. And get out there, and then you come home at the end of the night and you wonder why you're absolutely exhausted, you know, and fall into bed. So for me, and you're absolutely right, that compassion has to begin with yourself first, you know, and we're very bad at that. But I think we have to give that self that's been given to us each day a listening, because otherwise we eventually run out of steam. And that's why people get burned out. But I think the other thing is, it's about just noticing and what's going on in your life today and where your energy is or where your heart is or your pain is or whatever, just to be aware of it. You don't have to change it. And that's the giving yourself permission. You just have to notice it. It doesn't need to be fixed. Oh, that's there. I hadn't realized that was as important as it is, but okay, maybe I need to do something about that, but I don't have to do it now.
I loved what Brian said about asking yourself, what has washed up on my shore today? It feels like a perfect practice to help us navigate loss, or any other time for that matter. The analogy of the tide washing something up on the shore also reminds me of how mindfulness practice helps us to move with that same tide, or witness our experiences and emotions as being part of a cycle. Emotions ebb and flow like the tide, and sometimes the surge is stronger than other times and the high tide more profound. And sometimes the tide ebbs to a place of calm and almost non-existence before rising again, possibly ambushing us like we talked about. In my own experience of navigating difficult emotions through mindful awareness, it can be difficult at first to really sit with the emotion. But by aligning with the process of ebb and flow, I've found that a sort of trust emerges that the emotion will ebb if I first allow it to flow. The practice of being very gentle with ourselves is helpful, and also letting go of attachment to the emotion, recognizing it but not holding on to it. This is what Brian was talking about when he says, you don't have to fix anything, just recognize it's there. I think we can sometimes cling to feeling we need to fix our emotional state, that we should stop feeling a certain way about things and so on. The depth of emotions we experience through bereavement can't be ignored a lot of the time, but we can learn to see them as a normal part of the process of grief. I'm reminded of Janie Godley's advice to put on your emotional life jacket, using that as an analogy for our mindfulness practices that can serve to keep us afloat while these powerful waves of grief swell up without engulfing us entirely. I went on to ask Brian to share his thoughts on loss in the context of losing other things in life as opposed to being bereaved by death.
Well, I think you have, like, there's loss of so many things. You know, there's a loss of a pet. Mm. You know, there's a loss of a limb. There's the loss of your job, there's a loss of identity, there's a loss of role, there's a loss of a way of life, there's a loss of your normal, what was your normal. And I think the pandemic has really thrown the tin hat at all of that, in the sense that so many people's way of life was completely disrupted, and people were forced to living in isolation. So it's the loss of community, the loss of meeting up, the loss of companionship, the loss of entertainment, you know, the loss of hobbies, the loss of activity. Yeah, when we talk about loss, like, it isn't just grief and death. Like, the loss can cover lots of things, you know. The loss of our looks, the loss of, you know, sexual function, the loss of identity, the loss of role, the loss of home, the loss of your job, the loss of business, loss of pets is huge. But yeah, loss is profound. But that's where I think the mindfulness piece comes in, and the practice of that, not only in the person who's going through the loss, but in the people around them, that there's a sense of, you know, this is big stuff. I need to give myself permission. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, you know yourself, if you're telling a problem that you're having to somebody, and we all minimize our own stuff a lot of the time. We think, look, you know, you try and get on with it. And then somebody has that recognition and they look at you and they say, God, you've a lot going on, haven't you? And all of a sudden you just go, there's a big sigh, like, I'm not being unrealistic. Somebody else recognises that I have a lot going on, that this is hard for me today. And the relief in that is profound. Not that anything's changed, because the situation is still the situation and you still have a lot going on, but you're not alone in it. That somebody else gets it, that this is tough for you. And all of a sudden, you've companionship and things aren't as bad. And that's the moment of going forward, I think. people are hugely resilient. Mm. Like, we have enormous power within ourselves to heal and to get well. But I think we just need sometimes the bit of nurture, you know, from someone else, or the understanding, or the permission to be kind to yourself that will actually get you on the road forward.
I love that, Brian. And I think that's a really lovely note, actually, to end our conversation on, because it's that idea of not being alone and being kind to ourselves. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for this really rich conversation.
You're so welcome.
That's lovely.
Thank you.
So, as you heard, there was a lot to explore. Brian spoke early in the session about being distracted. Grounding practices can be really useful to help manage this. Breath awareness, engaging the senses, the body scan, mindful walking. These are all practices that help bring our focus into the moment and attend to what we need to right now. We spoke a lot about sitting with how we're feeling, as well as being kind to ourselves. Self-compassion practices are helpful and support in the process of learning to be gentle and kind to ourselves. There are versions of all these practices available in the guided practices section on our website, www.mentalhealthireland.ie, mindfulness/meditation. There are a variety of options to choose from, some short and some longer in duration. Feel free to experiment with them and find the ones that resonate with you. Most of all, I hope this episode will serve to support you in navigating your life in a mindful way.